This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbian, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
Jennifer Renee.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
Tonight, since David Elliott must be on vacation, we're going to talk to Ray Hill.
He's actually involved in a big anti-death penalty project.
Oh, good. Good for him. And Ray Hill's going to be talking about the Supremes, the court, as we sort of a wrap-up of what the session was and what a session it was. And then we're going to be talking to the playwright, Fernando, I'm not going to try this, Deborah.
Dalbolina, I suppose.
About American Homefront, the latest offering from Unhinged Productions. In our second hour, Amnesty International Houston is screening of a GLBT documentary, Dangerous Living. And to discuss it, their interest in a forum, this sounds real. I'd love to see this. And then, of course, we have all of our other stuff from This Way Out and a little bit of chit-chatting among us all. So, that's what's on tonight's show.
And Wednesday, Independence Day.
Wednesday, Independence Day, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus is having a fundraiser at our honorable controller's house in East Parker. And it's a little bit pricey, but because it's a fundraiser. And if you're interested, you can go to hglbtpc.org. And I'm sure there's other things going on.
Normally, the caucus meets on Wednesday nights, the first Wednesday of the month. So this month is a little different.
We're going to be flag waving.
Right.
And that's right.
It's become a tradition over the last several years for there to be a fundraiser held and seeing fireworks and kind of doing the hokey, you know. Well, I don't know. I've had some where they had hors d'oeuvres and stuff. It wasn't the hot dog and, you know, potato salad.
Well, this year we're going to have, it's catered.
Oh,
and it's going to be barbecue from Papa's. Absolutely.
Oh, there you go.
So you can come and eat hearty. And then when it's over with, you can go, since it's going to be at Niece Parker's home, yeah, it's not that far from where the fireworks are going to be. You can go and join the revelry.
Ooh.
Considering it, depending on the rain, of course, but the revelry will be there. Most people didn't care about whether it's raining or not.
Right.
Like the Pride Parade.
And this event will happen whether it rains.
That's right. We'll be inside. And, you know, the caucus has been able to do a lot of great things the last couple of years. But to do so, the caucus needs money.
It takes participation.
Of people, volunteers, as well as funding. So please consider it and go to hglbtpc.org.
And Ray Hill will be with Jack Belinsky in just a moment. And first, we're going to go to News Wrap from This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watt.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 30th, 2007. Bishops of the Anglican Church of Canada narrowly overruled clergy and lay people at their General Synod this week to defeat a proposal that would have allowed local congregations to bless same-gender unions. Bishops voted 21-19 against sanctioning the blessings, trumping larger margins in favor by clergy and laity. The proposal had to pass in all three legislative bodies to be implemented. A bishop who's expressed support in the past for full acceptance of gays and lesbians, however, was elected to lead the Anglican Church of Canada. Bishop Fred Hiltz of Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island was chosen on the fifth ballot. Queer-supportive Catherine Jeffords Shorey became the first woman elected to lead the U.S. Episcopal Church last year. Sharp disagreements over the ordination of openly gay Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson of New Hampshire and the blessings of same-gender unions in both countries have threatened to split the Canadian Church and the U.S. Episcopal wing from the 77-million-member Global Anglican Communion, loose federation of national Christian churches around the world. Orthodox Anglicans, primarily from Africa, Asia, and Latin America, believe sex outside of heterosexual marriage is contrary to biblical teachings. But many liberal Anglicans in North America favor a more inclusive and welcoming interpretation.
Thousands of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people marched safely through the streets of central London at the city's annual Pride Parade on June 30th, just a day after a double car bomb attack, thought to be terrorist-inspired in the city's West End, was foiled. On the same day in Paris, organizers said some 700,000 people attended that city's annual Pride Parade. Lesbi-gay activists want to start a dialogue with recently elected conservative French President Nicolas Sarkozy to lobby for his support of queer equality issues. An estimated 8,000 LGBT people and their supporters paraded through Dublin on June 23rd. Organizers said it was the largest Irish Pride event to date. Revelers braved occasional heavy downpours at a post-parade concert and rally to hear speeches, music, and dance for several hours. On the same day, some 400,000 people turned out for Pride in Berlin, where the political focus was on discrimination in the workplace and in schools, while about 1,000 marched with Pride in Athens and enjoyed a post-parade concert.
Queer communities in New York, Toronto, Chicago, and San Francisco held their annual Pride marches on June 24th. Crowds estimated at close to 1 million each watched in New York and Toronto, while between 300 and 600,000 spectators were reported in Chicago and San Francisco. Marriage equality was the main political focus in New York and San Francisco. Legislation to allow gay and lesbian couples to marry has passed the state assemblies in California and New York, but is unlikely to be enacted in either state this year. In Toronto, where same-gender marriage is legal, as it is across Canada, the city kept its marriage bureau open throughout the weekend. Several dozen couples, many from the U.S., tied the knot. A post-parade street party in the gay village went on throughout the evening. Chicago marchers celebrated the opening of the city's new LGBT community center. The $20 million complex on the city's north side will offer educational, recreational, and social services, along with theater events and social functions.
Top Jamaican reggae dance hall singers Beanie Man, Sizzla, and Capleton have signed an agreement to stop encouraging violence against LGBT people in their music. Under the Reggae Compassionate Act, written by reggae promoters working with activists from the international Stop Murder Music campaign, the three performers won't release new anti-gay songs or re-release or perform their earlier gay-bashing material. The document states, in part, that there's no space in the music community for hatred and prejudice, including no place for racism, violence, sexism, or homophobia. We agree to not make statements or perform songs that incite hatred or violence against anyone from any community. Stop Murder Music's campaign has led to the cancellation in several countries of concerts by the three singers and fellow dancehall singers Elephant Man, T.O.K., Mounty Killa, Vibes Cartel, and Buju Banton. They're also notorious for promoting violence against LGBT people in their songs, but none of them has endorsed the agreement as yet. Gareth Williams, co-chair of the Kingston-based Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, hopes that the singers who signed the pledge mean it. "We hope it is not commercially motivated by the singers' desire to maintain their concert revenues," he said, "but a sincere commitment that will encourage an end to homophobic violence and to all violence against everyone."
The British military this week issued a blanket apology to all gay and lesbian members of the armed forces who were discharged because of their sexuality. The ban on gays and lesbians serving in the military was lifted in 2000, more than 30 years after homosexuality was decriminalized in the UK. Various branches of the military have since moved toward inclusion. Last year, the Royal Navy hired national LGBT rights group Stonewall to advise it. The man in charge of equality training for the Ministry of Defense, Wing Commander Phil Sagar, apologized for the persecution that gays and lesbians suffered prior to 2000, telling the BBC that, "We're sorry for anyone who has suffered personal trauma. Our challenge is to create an environment where there is a genuine freedom from harassment and discrimination." The government has paid out the equivalent of more than $1.6 million to 24 former service members who'd threatened court action over their dismissal after the removal of a ban in 2000. More than 50 claims are still pending. The United States is the only major Western power to bar gays and lesbians from serving openly in the military. A recent U.S. poll found overwhelming support for a bill introduced in Congress in February to repeal the Clinton-era Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, while two lawsuits are challenging that policy in federal courts in Massachusetts and California.
Three former leaders of a U.S.-based ministry that counsels gays and lesbians to change their sexual orientation also apologized this week, saying that their message had caused isolation, shame, and fear. The interdenominational Christian organization Exodus International was created in 1976 in Orlando, Florida, and has grown to include more than 120 ministries in the United States and Canada, and over 150 ministries overseas. It promotes freedom from homosexuality through prayer, counseling, and group therapy. Current Exodus President Alan Chambers claimed that the ministry's methods have helped many people, including himself. "I think there's room for more than one opinion on this subject," he said in a statement, "and giving people options isn't dangerous." But all major U.S. psychiatric and psychological associations have said so-called reparative therapy is often destructive. Disavowing Exodus at this week's press conference were co-founder Michael Bussey, who left the group in 1979, Jeremy Marks, former president of Exodus International Europe, and Darlene Bogle, the founder of Paraclete Ministries, an Exodus referral agency. "Some who heard our message were compelled to try to change an integral part of themselves, bringing harm to themselves and their families," the three said in a statement released outside the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Community Services Center. It coincided with the opening of the annual Exodus Conference, held this week at Concordia University in Southern California.
And for the first time, a majority of Americans believe that gays and lesbians could not change their sexual orientation even if they wanted to, according to results of a CNN Opinion Research Corporation poll released this week. 56% of about 515 respondents said they do not believe sexual orientation can be changed. In 1998, according to a CNN Time poll, that number was 36%. In a 1977 poll, the number was 13%. The sampling error for the new poll, conducted from May 4th to May 6th, is plus or minus 4.5 percentage points.
But another survey suggests that more than 150,000 secondary students in the UK have been bullied because they're gay or lesbian. Among the findings of a new poll released this week, over two-thirds of lesbian and gay students reported being victimized by homophobic bullying at school by students and staff alike, ranging from verbal and physical abuse to death threats. 70% said the bullying directly affected their schoolwork, and half said they'd miss school entirely because of it. The survey was sponsored by national queer advocacy group Stonewall and is reportedly the largest poll of lesbian gay young people ever conducted in the UK. Nearly all the 1,100 gay, lesbian, and bisexual students surveyed said they'd heard derogatory phrases in school, such as dyke, queer, or poof, and that only half of their teachers intervened when students used such homophobic language. Stonewall Chief Executive Ben Summerskill said that these deeply disturbing figures should serve as a wake-up call to everyone working in education.
But finally, in happier news for U.S. LGBT young people, the number of gay-straight alliances registered with the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, or GLSEN, has mushroomed in recent years, according to a press release issued this week by the group, which advocates for a safe school environment for LGBT students. The first gay-straight alliance was formed in 1988 by LGBT and supportive heterosexual students to provide a safe haven for queer kids to discuss issues of concern to them. Since then, GLSEN said 3,577 GSAs have registered with them, at least one from every state, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico. Despite efforts in several locales to ban them, the Federal Equal Access Act protects the right of students to form such clubs. GLSEN founder and executive director Kevin Jennings said that the spirit of tolerance in so many of our nation's students truly amazes us at GLSEN. Schools still are not a safe place for far too many of them, but GSAs are helping change that every day.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 30th, 2007. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, we made it through a Supreme Court session. Not very well, but we made
barely.
It through. Barely.
With me, of course, is Ray Hill, who is our Supreme Court reporter, a commentator, and just like the Daily Show, he's the head of the Supreme Court reporting department. And there's a lot of interesting decisions that came down, mostly bad, a couple good ones. One was about the environment, and there was one good one about the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
That was 5-4.
It was a stay, and that wasn't a full decision. It was just a stay. And that doesn't mean that that guy walks out of death row. It means that he walks back into court for some tidying up of a previous United States Supreme Court decision that apparently the trial court, and there's 5 or 6 more of those cases pending in Texas alone. Just in Texas, not to mention what's going on in other states, and there's a lot going on in other states. I think that where I want to start with this is, let's go back to when the Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito was being prepared to be put on the Supreme Court. There was a lot of rhetoric about, yes, they're conservative, yes, they're conservative, and part of being conservative means that they believe in the stability of rulings, in other words, precedent law that has been on the books for a long, long time would not easily be undone. They said most of that in the context of Roe v. Wade. Well, we had to peek at that. But it's interesting, that opinion was not written by either Alito or Roberts. It was written by Kennedy, who is supposedly the new swing voter.
Yes.
With Sandra Day O'Connor gone, who had been the swing voter in a great many cases over the years, including our case.
And Kennedy has been in the 5-4 majority in every one of the cases.
Every one of the cases. He was on the winning side, so he was the switch hitter that moved along the political spectrum. And a lot of these cases are ideological. Now, there was a decision that comes down dealing with partial birth abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the deal is that partial birth abortion is a nomenclature given to a procedure that can be used in any trimester of pregnancy. In other words, even if the fetus hadn't developed past the first trimester. If you use this procedure, then the right-wingers and religious nuts are going to scream, partial birth, partial birth. And the Supreme Court of the United States has outlawed the procedure, no matter where it takes place. In writing his opinion, Kennedy kept saying, about 3 times, he said, there is no evidence to support my position. He said that in his own opinion, because he was looking at a specific case in which the evidence did not indicate a viable fetus in the process of this procedure. So he said, I don't need no stinking evidence, because as a member of this court, I know what the truth is. In other words, the decision is not based on the facts and the law as it has been understood previously. The decision is based on Justice Kennedy, since he's a swing voter, and there were no surprise votes in this thing, Justice Kennedy's ideological position on the idea of abortion, not in the third trimester or otherwise, but at any point. And what they outlawed was not the time, but the procedure.
Interesting.
And so now other procedures are going to advance the court. You're going to consider this procedure, you're going to consider that procedure. And so the Supreme Court can whittle away that way. That's one of the alarms that said this is a very different court. This is a court that abandoned previous procedure that had existed since since Roe v. Wade. Now, why is that important to listeners of Queer Voices? Roe v. Wade essentially is an expansion of the right to privacy. The right to privacy was created in a case called Griswold many years ago, Griswold versus Commonwealth Attorney, which is about birth control. contraception. And it dealt with Connecticut, Griswold versus...
That was like in the 60s,
It was
right?
way back in the late 50s and 60s that case progressed, got to the Supreme Court, Griswold came down, and that's the foundation stone of privacy. Basically, Griswold said, privacy is the marriage bed. All right, then along comes Baker and Hardwick and ultimately Lawrence, and privacy expands to include the whole bedroom. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That gives us, gay people, gay men, lesbians, and others similarly situated, the right to privacy of our own lives. Now, we make much that that decision was 6-3. Actually, the decision on privacy was 5-4. Because Justice O'Connor concurred with the result on different grounds, because the Texas law applied only to homosexuals and not to everybody. She agreed with the outcome of the decision on the basis of equal protection.
Okay.
So she's gone now, and we are hard-pressed to find five friends on that court to continue that. So if they're whittling away with privacy inside a woman's body, as in Roe v. Wade and the abortion case secession, what are they going to do when they get around to looking at the only expansion of privacy since Roe, which was Lawrence?
Well, and there's also the free speech one with the bong hits for Jesus.
Well, there's a contrast there. In they had two major free speech cases, and I watched that very closely because
yes, I know
my mother, freedom of expression. And so one of the cases is bong hits for Jesus, and it was about students. And they said that they did not have enough freedom of speech to put that in their paper. However, earlier in the session, they went to Wisconsin Right to Life, which is a corporation. And a corporation have not traditionally been recognized as individuals,
right.
as citizens in this system who are guaranteed freedom of expression. So they extended freedom of expression, free speech, First Amendment rights to a corporation for essentially the first time in their history and denied it to students. And in so doing, they said that the United States Supreme Court holds precedence over state courts in that process, but apparently, because state courts are elected and close to the people, but apparently elected school boards who are elected and close to the people do not have the protection of Supreme Court support. So they support some local elected officials and other. So what's emerging here is a pattern of deception, a pattern of undoing things that the price fixing case
yes.
is enormous.
Really?
It's
really?
An enormous case. It's an enormous case. Why? Because law students have for over 100 years thought that that price fixing by the local retailer, the one closest to the ultimate buyer, was sacrosanct under the Constitution. They thought it was written in the Constitution. Actually, it was based on the decision over 100 years ago. It just become so whenever they say that they're not going to overturn precedent law, this is the glaring example where out of the blue they decide to go with the big boys who make large political contributions to the people who support who appoint them to the court and give them power. So they hose. They're just ordinary whores whoring out to corporate power. Corporate power now has protection under the First Amendment for free speech to say what they will, whether it is true or not. And they have the power to set prices from the top and dictate to distributors and retailers what a minimum price shall be. And that's more power given to corporations than at any time in the history of the United States. Rumored to be Republican, Teddy Roosevelt must be spinning in his coffin because the great trust buster would see this as undoing what he set out to do, lo, those many years, 100 years ago.
Wow. And
I don't know what to say. I mean, it's incredible. I heard today Linda Greenhouse was on Fresh Air,
mm-hmm.
and she also had a front page story in the New York Times mm-hmm. about the Supreme Court, but I think you've explained it better than...
There's a whole bunch of stuff out there, and you can get it everywhere, but of course, the modern boon while we've got it is the Internet. You can go to the Internet and look up this session of the United States Supreme Court, and you can get all... That's what I did. I got the law professors discussing it.
Right. And you've been following this throughout.
I'm not a stranger in the field.
We also have the school desegregation issue.
Well, Brown versus Board of Education has basically been undermined
Incredible.
For the meanest and most petty of reasons. You had basically a voluntary, it wasn't a court order, the school district voluntarily did some things toward diversity. And for Chief Justice Roberts to say the way you end discrimination based on race is you end discrimination based on race, knowing full well that the product of this decision is not to end discrimination based on race, but exacerbate it, aggravate it, agitate it. And so here we go. Unfortunately, there is a lot of rhetoric among people of minority populations who stood to gain from desegregation. And we're going back to a class, rich versus poor, and a racially and ethnically segregated society. And who is advocating this? They called them neocons. And they gave us such wonderful things as the war in Iraq, the invasion of Afghanistan, where now United States soldiers kill more Afghani civilians than does the Taliban.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just one news break after another of the insanity. And then out of the blue, here comes Scooter Libby. And the president, quote, did not pardon him but commuted his sentence so he doesn't have to go to jail. Duh. Who is going to supervise his commuted sentence? Political appointees, political patronage appointees of the very president that Scooter Libby was in trouble for trying to protect, the president and the vice president. This is about the war, and this is about the scandal surrounding the war, and it is about the propaganda machine of this country. What they really believe is free speech for them.
Right.
And none for anybody else.
Right. And protect them from privacy, but we're not protected from privacy. And Justice Cheney thinks he's a separate branch of the government now.
That's bizarre.
It's just unbelievable. I mean, as John Stewart says, he doesn't have enough time to go into all these scandals. I mean, there are new ones breaking out all
the
time.
Yeah, Stewart's having a ball. And if the listeners are not currently watching The Daily Show, it comes on daily.
Yes, and it's repeated throughout the day.
A dozen times.
Yes.
It's even more daily than it used to be.
Well, we also had this really sad announcement today about the young kid who was sodomized by the pipes. And
Jack, that hit me right in, excuse me for quoting Barbara Jordan, I feel like I've been kicked in the gut. And I could kick myself because I did not belly up and go over there and intervene. I'm getting old and there's only so many things that I can do, but I do know the effects of a traumatic syndrome, that experience left deep physical and emotional scars on this basically child.
Right, who just testified in front of Congress about a month ago.
Yes, but let me tell you, people return from war with post-traumatic syndrome. People come out of prison with post-traumatic syndrome. And here I can chum up with and try to help Johnson, the rape victim in the prison case that needed it. But I didn't seek this young man out because I'm good at counseling people about that. because everybody else is basically saying, don't relive it, get over it. But you can't. It lays there beneath the surface, and it eats on you with tremendous thing. And it's just a tragedy that this young man now has taken life in a very dramatic way. I mean, basically, he's on a cruise ship. He knows it's going to be really, really, really big news. He's crying out to the rest of us about a pain that everybody else, I think, basically around him wanted him to hide.
Yeah, he's 18 years old.
18-year-old child.
Absolutely.
And well, let me say something right here, because there are people listening to the show right now that have experienced brutality and harassment and a lot of those things. Those things leave scars. And you can sugarcoat them over, but they will come back to haunt you. And don't do that alone. If you're young, get involved in Hatch. If you're older, get your behind over to Montrose Counseling Center or some similarly sympathetic atmosphere and deal with it that way. You don't have to hurt alone. No, we don't anymore. Gosh.
Simple call to the switchboard.
Simple call to switchboard.
713-529-3211.
713-529-3211. That call will get you connected. And you do need to be connected. Don't suppress that horror. Don't suppress those fears. Share it. Get yourself somebody that understands. Perhaps somebody that's been through it before.
Well, Ray Hill has been actually one of the founders of this radio station.
And the predecessor of this radio program.
Right, absolutely. Wildenstein and...
They said I'd run out of material in 6 weeks.
Yes, right.
Right.
Right. We have problems getting you out the door sometimes. So, Ray, thank you for joining us, and a very good analysis of what's going on in the Supreme Court.
Thank you, Jack, and congratulations to the staff of Queer Voices. Deborah's a very well-organized person. She prints out schedules so everybody knows what's coming up. Mercy. Ms. Poole is here and is a real asset to the program. And Jack, you're as faithful as that.
And let's not forget Glenn.
Oh, and Glenn. And
Rocket scientist.
The guy with the voice. Right. Yeah, the guy with the voice. Glenn was telling me that his biggest fear, as he gets older, he looks more like me.
We all do. That's the scary part. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Jerry Falwell's favorite deacon scampered up the aisle at church, sporting lavender pajamas and a matching purple purse, with a triangle tiara and the cutest little hop. Tinky Winky made him do it. Even God can't make him stop. So now Jerry's on the Tinky with his soft and supple ways. How he captivates the children and recruits them all as gays. How he undermines their virtue, all that's manly, strong, and straight. Tinky Winky's tempting toddlers, and they're going for the bait. Do you think that Tink's the Antichrist, the Winky Viet Cong, with his decadent accessories and tantalizing song? You beat the same old drum, Jerry, you stir the same old pot. Tinky Winky must be banned, Tinky Winky should be shot. Ah, but Tinky's hard to find out on a cold Wyoming night, where two losers cruise the bar scene and they're spoiling for a fight. But they do find Matthew Shepard, and he's small, alone, and gay. It's 2-1, they got a gun, they're taking him away. You know what happens next, Jerry, you know, and you know why. They left him hanging on a fence to bleed and freeze and die. The word is father to the deed you can't undo. No, it wasn't Tinky Winky, Jerry, maybe it was you. For the word may shine like lightning, but the thunder sounds like hate. If they came to get you, Jerry, would you care that they were straight? If you're holed up in the bathroom, would you finally understand why the policeman at the door has got a broomstick in his hand? Tinky Winky may be boring, Tinky Winky may be quaint, Tinky Winky may be holy and be canonized a saint. Tinky Winky may be dumb, Jerry, but when push comes to shove, Tinky Winky will not hate you, no matter who you love. I was scanning your old sermons, and in one of them I read, is it true? Is it loving? Does it need to be said? That's three strikes and you're out. Jerry, it's time to scrap the speech. Take a tip from Tinky Winky and practice what you preach. Why don't you practice what you preach?
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and we've got with us tonight Fernando Dovalina and Ned Youssef. Fernando is the writer of a absolutely interesting, I haven't seen it, so I can't say more than that, but interesting play that's for Unhinged Productions.
Right.
It's called American Homefront.
Correct.
And Youssef is in the play. You play one of the characters.
Yes, sir.
The partner of the lieutenant who's kidnapped, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Now, everybody listening to this going, what in the world are they talking about? Now, tell me, Fernetta, tell me a little bit about the play.
Okay, in a nutshell, it begins with an announcement to a couple that their son, who is an army lieutenant stationed in Iraq, has been kidnapped along with other members of his unit. The army comes to tell them this, and also to tell them they have to be careful about what they say, because the army has found out and has known for some time that the lieutenant is gay. And they didn't kick him out because he followed the rules, don't ask, don't tell. And the army fears what would happen if the insurgents, who are fundamentalist Islamic insurgents, find out about this. And they think that they're in danger already, of course, but they might be in even more severe danger if they knew this. So it's imperative that they keep this information to themselves and make sure it doesn't get out. The only problem is that
there's more to this story, isn't there?
There's a lot to the story. The mother does not know.
Oh.
And the father does.
Now, how long is this? She doesn't know at all?
She doesn't know at all.
Doesn't even have a clue.
Probably down deep inside somewhere. You know. In fact, that's a line from the play. Are you sure you haven't seen that?
No, I've said it enough times.
Yeah, well, I play with that scenario. You know, the mother's always known and so on. And there's some laughs in this play. It has to relieve some of the tension, because the tension is pretty strong.
But now, the other part of this is that his partner, played by Ned Youssef, is
Arabic and Islamic. He's an Arabic American young man, and the soldier in Iraq was very interested in Arabic cultures, Islamic cultures, and studied it at the university, and probably that's how he met the character that Ned plays. So there's another element there too.
So Ned, tell us something about your character.
All right, well, Wally is involved in a relationship, and he knew that Lieutenant Allen, his boyfriend, his partner, he knew that his mother didn't know, and so it was very hard, and on a lot of occasions he would have odd moments with the mother, because they've been together for 6 years, and so I can imagine that they've had, through the 6 years time, sidestepping the matter, and it all just comes to head in one particular scene where he has to deal with the love that he's getting from the father, and somewhat the shame that he's getting from the mother, that she's so ashamed of knowing him and knowing that her son is gay. And so it's kind of hard to take into consideration that his partner is kidnapped, a hostage somewhere, and yet at the same time he has to deal with talking to the mother and not exploding himself.
Let's talk about some dynamics there. Now, what was the source of your idea for this play?
Well, you know, I was a newsman for many, many years. I worked for the Chronicle. And so I followed the news in the 70s and early 80s when the Iranian revolutionaries took our embassy people hostage. Well, two of those, it turns out, were gay, and that didn't come out until after they were released. There were other cases, a couple of guys who were on a hijacked airliner. They were gay. Nobody ever found out until later. And more recently, there was a Canadian newsman who was gay. It didn't come out until he was released, and they all came out of it safely. But the fear was always that if fundamentalists found out about it, knowing how they feel about the subject of homosexuality, that they were in even more danger than the others who were there. So I had that idea, and then when the issue of Don't Ask, Don't Tell became a little more heated in the last couple of years, I thought, well, you know, there's a story here. And as it turns out, then I found out about another case that it never became public. So it probably happens more than we were aware of, and though I can't say that the situation that I have imagined in my brain, I don't know if it has happened, I wouldn't be surprised if it has.
Probably so. And I'm not too sure that if the current administration knew, they would make as many grand efforts as they do to get the hostages released.
Well, who knows? You know, it's interesting that just recently we had the case of Staff Sergeant Eric Alva of the United States Marine Corps, who was the first American who was wounded in the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
He was awarded the Purple Heart. He went through rehabilitation. He lost his right leg and suffered other serious injuries to his limbs. He's a great guy. And after he was discharged, and by the way, the president and Laura Bush visited him in the hospital, you know, for the photo ops, and so did Rumsfeld.
Mm-hmm.
They all marched in. And then this guy is discharged. He's given a prosthetic leg, and he comes out as a gay man. And now he's campaigning for the efforts to do away with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He was our guest Friday, by the way. He got a standing ovation from a full house.
Oh, that's wonderful.
He was eloquent. He was absolutely eloquent.
Now, this is on, when is the play on?
The play is on, it began this past week. It runs for two more weekends. It'll be on Friday and Saturday of this week and the following week at 8 o'clock. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. And next week there will also be a Wednesday and Thursday performance at 8 p.m. And people can order tickets. Can I say this?
Sure.
They can
go
order
ahead
online by going to our website, which is u-p, that's P as in Paul, .org, u-p.org, and click on tickets and order online.
Okay, good. Is there a telephone number since you're doing this?
No
telephone number. You got to order this, online, or show
order,
up?
You got to order online.
And where is it located?
It is located at 1107 Chartres,
mm-hmm,
which is across 59, U.S. 59 North. And the Brown Convention Center is on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the 1100 block, 1107. It's the Silver House Theater. It used to be a restaurant, a Chinese restaurant.
Oh.
Silver House Restaurant. And now it's a theater.
Now, this isn't the only play you've written. You've got one. You also have another one currently in production here in Houston.
Well, it's in
the
rehearsal.
Allen Theater.
It's in rehearsal.
It's a rehearsal.
It's in rehearsal.
Okay.
It's being done. Yeah, I have to be forthright about this.
The Gospel According to Tammy Faye.
That's correct.
That's a very intriguing title.
Yeah. It's a musical based on the life of Tammy Faye Baker, the famous televangelist. And it is being done at the Alley, but not by the Alley. It's being done by Baring and Friends, which is the theatrical arm of Baring United Methodist Church, Baring Memorial United Methodist Church. And they raise money for their AIDS ministries there. Oh. So this will be a benefit for the AIDS ministries at Baring.
Is it going to be one performance?
No, there's three performances, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, a Sunday matinee. And if people want to order tickets for that, they go to baringandfriends.org. And Baring is spelled B as in boy, E-R-I-N-G. One word, baringandfriends.org.
That's good. You got that right down. You're smooth.
I rehearsed before.
Oh, good. I was interested to find out that you are also the playwright in residence for Unhinged.
At Unhinged,
since,
yeah.
Since 2002.
Yeah, that's right. The first one they did was one called The Man in the Trunk, and that ran for 6 weeks, did very well there. And then I've produced some fundraisers for them, and they've done some other of my short plays.
I was going to ask you, what does a playwright in residence do?
He spends a lot of money producing his own plays and trying to keep, along with all the other board members, the this nonprofit organization afloat.
All right. All right. Now, back to our play. When is it? When's the next showing again?
The next one is Friday. This coming Friday at 8 p.m.
Okay. And again, let's give them the information.
All right. Good for you. Again, you can order online. You go to u-p, as in Paul, .org. And click on tickets and order them that way.
Okay. Anything you want to say, Ned, before we wrap up?
I had a great time. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, that was good. Yeah, suck up to the interviewer. Fernando, yes, anything you want to say that's something I haven't asked that you really want to get out?
Well, you know, we were talking about, and Ned, before we came on, says, what do you hope to do with this? And I said, well, if I can change one mind... in this don't ask, don't tell business. I mean, it's besides being wrong, it's just plain stupid. You have talented individuals who are being kicked out for all the wrong reasons at a time when we need them. And they're willing to fight for this country and to serve this country, and they're being kicked out for really stupid reasons. It's bad for our national security. If nothing else, it's bad for our national security.
We won't get any disagreement out of here. We've been talking with Fernando Dovalina and Ned Youssef, one of the characters in the play American Homefront at Unhinged Productions. And you can get a chance to watch it, see it on Friday. And thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
So he's holding me in his arms, and he's giving me sweet little kisses, and he's telling me he'll never harm me, and he's whispering how wonderful this is. And I tell him that I love him, and I tell him I'll be true. And I've said these things to other boys, but right now the old words feel so new. And I ask him, how did I get so lucky? I didn't even have to try. I'm just some guy. And he's smiling like he means it, and he's stretched out on his back, and he's telling me now that he loves me for the fifth or the sixth time. I can't keep track. And I watch his eyes as they shine, run my fingers through his hair, and I touch his chest where his heart is, and I tell him I find safe haven there. And I ask him, how did you get to be so sweet and so kind?
So sweet and so kind.
I don't know, he says, I'm nothing special, I'm just some guy. And I say, your heart is so big, and your mind's so alive, your mind's so alive. You have passion and freedom and vision and drive, you have so much to give, and you give it with care.
his fingertips over my skin, and I'm happier now than I've ever been. And I'm hoping this feeling won't die. And if he says he's just some guy, that's fine. The truth is, he's mine. My sweetheart, my love, sent down from the sky, sent down from the sky, so very much more than just some guy.
From the year 2000, that was Anthony Rapp and a song called Just Some Guy. And then before the interview with Fernando Dovalina, we had Charlie King's Tinky Winky from the album I Struck Gold. This is Queer Voices.
And Glenn, do you know who Anthony Rapp is?
No, I don't.
He is the one from Rent.
Really?
Yes. He is like the main character.
Oh, okay. Well, you're kind of our Rent specialist.
I'm sort of a fanatic with Rent.
Yeah. Our resident authority on Rent.
Well, I don't know if I'm an authority on it. I just absolutely love the show, and I had the opportunity to see it in New York and Los Angeles and here in Houston. And actually, Houston's production was very good, too.
Uh-huh. Not that he's like, you know.
Well, I used to have to travel for my job, which I am really, really glad I don't have to do anymore.
But just traveling to the station's enough.
Yes, right, exactly. It's about 10 blocks.
From where?
From home.
From home.
Or work.
Or work.
Right.
Well, that's a
right.
good way to do it. Stay yeah. in the neighborhood.
Yes, Lucinda Williams has this song called Six Blocks. Well, I don't know if it's titled that, but the song goes six blocks away. Basically, everything, the song is about having, a boyfriend in Lafayette, Louisiana, and everything is six blocks away.
Yeah. And if it's more than that, you don't need to go there.
I guess
there.
It doesn't matter, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, last Friday they had the awards for the best floats in the parade. But
who won that? I missed that.
Well, it's on their website, and some of the winners are Best Social Commentary was the AIDS Foundation. Best Creative Sound was Tony's Corner Pocket. Fabulous Best Costumes was Asians and Friends. I remember that one.
Those were darling.
Yeah,
they were like little fast food cartons with chopsticks.
Little rice cartons.
Yeah.
Yes.
They always have good costumes every year.
Yes, mm-hmm. they do. And the best lighting was Charles Armstrong Investments. It's probably what the lighting was on. And Ruby Slippers, best walking unit was J.P. Morgan. Best performance was Houston Pride Band, and they were very good. Lone Star, best interpretation of the 2007 theme was the Gay Rodeo Association. That should have been natural.
Go yes. figure.
Yes. yes, except they didn't have guns like the T-shirts have. Best float for a profit company was Silver Eagle distributor Bud Light. Best float by a nonprofit group was Resurrection MCC. And Spirit of Montrose, best overall was Bering Memorial United Methodist Church.
Spirit of Montrose, that's an interesting title.
Will they change that? If they take it downtown, will it be the Spirit of Downtown?
Yes. Well, these awards have been pretty much the same awards, titles that we've had over a number of years.
And some of them is like, what the heck do they mean anyway?
Yeah, right. Well, and then they had the three judges' choices, and this is like, they don't necessarily fit in a category, but PFLAG, Planned Parenthood, and Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church. Well, they got the other award also.
Yeah, PFLAG was very cute because they had people dispersed throughout the group, all ages and all the range of members of PFLAG, and they would have like cartoon bubbles sticking up on a sign. It would say proud dad or out son. That was very clever, very cute. Did you know on Yahoo that you can get Gay Pride attire and accessories?
No, I didn't know
that. You know your little avatar that you can make? For,
right.
On Yahoo group? Well, you can go and have selections.
I'll get your own little...
I got a shirt that has the double women's symbol on it.
Uh-huh.
And you can add that. You have.
Well, this is not Houston Pride. This is just Pride in general.
This, yeah, it's on Yahoo groups. And if you're a member of one of the Yahoo groups that has some kind of queer connection, that is something that pops up on there. So,
I also want to talk about the movie Sicko.
Please do.
I haven't seen it.
It's Michael Moore's new documentary, and it's probably one of his best ever, although I like them all. And it's about and it opens up talking about some people having some rather serious health problems and trying to get treatment. He says, but this is not about those people. This is about the people who have insurance. Which is even scarier because a lot of the middle class does have insurance either through their work, mostly through their work, but how people are denied treatment for a number of reasons. And it, discussed that, and then it studied the system in Canada, the United Kingdom, and France. And France is probably the most, and I know this movie was somewhat propaganda in a sense, but you just look at that system over there, like in France, and how the reality is that you prevent a lot of these things. It's cheaper.
Right.
The reality is that here in this country, we pay more for medical care and get less out of it.
I think it's more of an expose than
Well, in England, it talked about how, this doctor was working for the system, and Michael Moore kept saying, well, you probably live in the ghetto, and one of the fears is that doctors wouldn't get paid what they're worth. And the doctor says, no, I live in a very good apartment, it's like $1 million apartment. And so he was saying that he got paid well and talked to people going into the hospital and being treated. And of course, his last stunt was taking some of like the 9/11 survivors to Guantanamo Bay because there is health care system there. Well, of course, he doesn't get in, so he ends up in the Havana hospital. And that, there's probably somewhat of a setup there, but, they have, even in Cuba, they have a system to treat people.
Yeah, it's showing the absurd.
Yes.
It's using the absurd to make the point.
Exactly.
Which is one of the things that, Molly Ivins always encouraged us to do, make the ridiculous look ridiculous.
Well, in talking about France, how the right wing, try to say how bad everything is in France when reality is there's a lot of good things that happen in France. And, we as Americans should be looking at every different system.
Exactly. And that's one of the points that Michael Moore has made on some of the talk shows that he's done. It's like we know the things that don't work. Let's look at where things do work. And some of the criticisms that they have made of other forms of medical care that other systems, other countries have, they always talk about, it takes forever to see anybody and blah, blah.
Right.
They said the average wait was 4 weeks. And, you can get that in the system here 4 weeks or more before you can get in to see a doctor.
Well, and he did show things about, like, emergencies, how long you have to wait for emergencies. And in France, there's actually doctors that will go to your house.
Oh, wow.
And he actually followed one, or he went with one of them. And this was, like, in the middle of the night. So, none of these systems are perfect, I'm sure, but they are much better than the system we have here.
Well, that's certainly something that we are all concerned about, especially
those of us who don't have insurance.
Well, those of us that don't have insurance, and also those of us that are aging, and those of us that have other health concerns.
Absolutely.
It's something that everyone should be entitled to. And there was a wonderful speech I heard today, which was from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and it was this, I think they say it was the 75th anniversary of his inauguration, something like that, when this speech was made. And it was where he talked about a New Deal for America. He kind of coined that phrase that marked his administration,
right.
The New Deal, which it was not meant to be. You know, it was like it kind of happened.
It was just catchy and it stuck.
Somebody,
hung on.
Yeah. And it was a wonderful report, but listening to what he said, you know, still, I think it's time for another New Deal in America.
Yeah.
And that deal must include the health care system being reformed so that
absolutely.
It serves the people.
You're listening to KPFT Houston at 90.1 and 89.5 in Galveston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
But wait, there's more. Last time on This Way Out, brilliant character actress Lily Tomlin chatted with host Dixie Trichel and KFAI-FM Minneapolis Fresh Fruit Collective members Lee Combs, John Townsend, and Norman Strizek about what inspires her many comic creations, including the ever-so-truthful Edith Ann and iconic telephone operator Ernestine, working with famed director Robert Altman on Nashville, and being out in pre-Ellen times. In this week's conclusion, Tomlin talks more about Altman, her comic essence, and how her decades-long creative and life partnership with Jane Wagner began.
Robert Altman, what was he like just as a friend?
He's very cool, a cool kind of guy, laid back, great sense of humor, kind of wry and off the cuff and footnoting. So I used to call him the benign patriarch. I was doing an album in 75, which was, I think, the same year Nashville came out. I can't remember now.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So I was doing my Modern Screen album, and I've told this before, but so I got a call while Jane and I were in the studio, and that album was about being interviewed for a fan magazine, and I was playing the interviewer and myself and all the other things. So I got a call to be on from Time saying if I would come out, they would give me the cover. I was really sort of taken aback because it was sort of like making a deal. Not that I don't think this happened to Ellen at all. I think Ellen, it was just the time. That's how it worked. That's how it went. And that's how it was supposed to be at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Me, it was more like a real barter. Come out and we'll give you the cover. And I thought, I just felt like it was kind of shoddy, you know, asking me to get the cover of a magazine. So instead I put a little piece on the album, which was at that time too, Boys in the Band had just come out.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Cliff Gorman was one of the straight people in the cast, and this, don't forget, this is 30 years ago, so.
Mm, right.
And so Cliff was like, when he'd do an interview, he'd make sure people knew he was straight. So I took his interviews and flipped them, you know, and I had the interviewers, and so I was really kind of referencing Nashville, because that was the first movie I'd done. And so the interviewer says to me, Lily, in your recent movie, what was it like playing a heterosexual woman? You know, and then I say, well, I've seen these women all my life. I know how they walk. I know how they talk. And I just did that kind of a flip on it, you know. And I thought, well, that'll be my answer to Time magazine, you know.
We're talking with great fondness about your one-woman show.
Right.
Will you be doing that again? Will you be doing another one-woman show?
You mean The Search?
Yes.
Which Jane wrote?
Yes.
No, I won't be doing that any time. When I go out, I mean, I do a compilation of, you know, 10 or 12 characters, and I usually bill it as an evening of classic Lily Tomlin. I have a part in this new HBO series, 12 Miles of Bad Road, that starts shooting in late August.
I wanted to ask you about the Lily Tomlin Jane Wagner Cultural Arts Center.
Here in L.A., you know, we have the Gay and Lesbian Community Services Center.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the first in the country, maybe mm-hmm. the first. I don't recall now. And it's a really fantastic institution, and it's devoted mostly to problems, illness and housing and, you know, getting a job and things like that, and mm-hmm. that kind of support. And they see a lot of people through the year. So they built an adjunct to the center just for the more positive side of life, you know,
mm-hmm.
Theater and art and other kinds of support groups and classes and things. They have a computer lab, and people meet there, and they have social things there, and that's called The Village. They have a large theater called the Renberg and a small black box theater, and they have an art gallery, and our names were attached to the cultural art through a very large donation.
I'm curious what you're most proud of, and I'm also curious if there are any specific things that you want to accomplish in this part of your life.
I guess I the thing I'm probably proudest of is just, you know, making people, and it sounds a little hokey, but honestly, being able to make people laugh at, you know, at all of us collectively, not in any divisive way.
Right.
That's gained sensibility, too. That's really one of the largest things that drew us together to begin with. But, you know, I saw a thing she'd done on television. I was preparing to do my Edith Ann album, and we had a couple of mutual friends, but we'd never met. And I happened to catch a rerun of the show she'd written for CBS called JT. It had been written for after-school program. It was the first thing she ever wrote because she had wanted to be a songwriter.
Was that about a cat?
Yeah, about the cat.
Oh, my
right.
God. I saw that when I was a little kid. I cried my eyes out. It was...
I know. So they ran it every year for 25 years after that holiday.
It was a wonderful film.
And she won a Peabody for it, too, her first time out. And I'd seen in it, and it was so essenced and so... It was like poetry, and yet it's totally natural. It's a kind of heightened naturalism. Every line was like a perception, and yet it's a belief. Dialogue and it was edgy and it was tender and it was satiric and it was loving and it was so funny. It was so many things, and I thought, oh my God, this is exactly what I look for in a monologue. You know, this kind of essence writing that communicates so much in such a short time. And because that JT had been about a kid, I wrote her and asked her to help me do my Edith Ann album.
Oh, that's great.
And I didn't hear from her for ages, which is really typical. Well, I haven't come to terms with that. I like Jane Fonda always says my third act and all that stuff.
Yeah, right.
I don't kind of get that, you know. And other people, you know, like Meryl and Jane both, you know, they were very maternal with Lindsay when they worked with her. And I couldn't, I just can't quite get why she doesn't know that I'm the same age as she is.
Thanks,
bye, you guys. Thanks so much.
Yep. Peace and love.
Thanks. And all the best to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Lily Tomlin entertaining the Fresh Fruit Collective at KFAI-FM in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Instigator of the Stonewall Riots, Sylvia Rivera, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In June of 1969, New York City police raided a gay bar called the Stonewall Inn. They stormed in, wielded their clubs, and arrested the patrons just for being who they were. As police filed out, Sylvia Rivera, a drag queen among the crowd of onlookers there, threw one of the first Molotov cocktails at the police, and a riot ensued. For her boldness and sense of conviction, Rivera is legendary in sparking the gay liberation movement. In 1970, she worked to pass the New York City Gay Rights Bill. Since it excluded transgender rights, Rivera helped form a group called Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries to fight for rights and provide social service support. In 2002, after years of tireless activism, Rivera died. Her ashes were placed in a horse-drawn carriage that was led solemnly past the Stonewall Inn, where it all began. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRAR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
Music that's sexy and fun, independently folky, and uniquely ethnic. Mix it up in this month's audiophile.
Back when we had sex, you'd call out my name, like Jesus.
after God or things more profane. Now you just call out for pizza at night, and your parts down below seem to be watertight. Back when we had sex, we had lots of fun with handcuffs and leather, dressing up like a nun. Now the remote spends more time on your lap than I do.
That song gets a lot more interesting, but that's all we can play on regular radio. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. That song is just one of the refreshing delights from the latest album by Lisa Koch, called Tall Cool Drink.
Oh boy, Tall Cool Drink, it's kind of jazzy, it's kind of sexy, it's kind of silly. It's got a couple of comedy songs on it, but the rest of it is just fun music. It's fun and it's sexy, and everyone should own one. Yeah.
Cause I need a tall, cool drink. I know I'm on the brink. Don't go messing with my mind. I got a thirst, baby, I'm taking my time.
Find out more about Lisa Koch and her album Tall Cool Drink at www.heylisa.com. That's www.heylisa.com.
Look up at that building. It must be 50 stories tall. And I see the water beyond the waves. I see it all.
Coyote Grace is an acoustic duo comprised of Joe Stevens, a trans man singer-songwriter, and Ingrid Ion, his partner on and off stage. Their debut CD has the interesting title, Boxes and Bags.
The title came about basically because we travel a lot and everything we own fits into either a box or a bag. And it's very telling of our troubadour lifestyle. It's very indie folk, alt folk we call it. We hope you like it.
The sun is shining now all across the land, from the California waters to the shores of Maryland. The sun is shining now all across this world, but right now it is shining on a girl. And it's so bright.
You can get more information about Coyote Grace and their album Boxes and Bags at www.coyotegrace.com.
Anyone for klezmer music? You'll get a treat with the album Traveling Show, the latest by the New York band Metropolitan Klezmer, led by drummer and producer Eve Sicular.
Traveling Show is our first all-live Metropolitan Klezmer release, and it's also got a Klez bonus track on there. That's our Yiddish-Latin groove of Comes Love. And the Metropolitan live set, it's a real variety. I mean, we've got folk, swing,
Yiddish tango, an original, and then even a klezmographied version of Guys and Dolls, you know, an obsession of mine from Broadway.
More about Metropolitan Klezmer and their album Traveling Show at www.metropolitanklezmer.com. That's www.metropolitanklezmer.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006. Or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
This is Queer Voices.
Hi, we have on the line Kristen Magnuson. Hello, Kristen?
Hello.
Yeah, it's, pronounce your name for me because it sounds much better the way you say it.
Kristen Magnuson, yes.
Yes, and she's from Sweden, in case you're wondering about the accent. And Kristen is involved with Amnesty International, and she's going to tell us about this film that's going to be showing. Unfortunately, it's going to be next Monday, but people can just plan on checking Queer Voices on the archives, because this not only is an exciting event regarding the film, but there's some other things going on with Amnesty that she wants to let people know about. So, Kristen, first of all, tell us what Amnesty International is.
Amnesty International is the world's largest human rights organization, and it's an organization working with a vision that we will have a world where every person enjoys all of the human rights enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other international human rights standards.
And how did Amnesty International come about?
Amnesty International was founded in the early 60s, and at the start of our history, we were mostly concerned about prisoners of conscience. So there were formed different action groups around the world, basically wrote letters to government, and in order to release prisoners of conscience.
And that's prisoners of war and prisoners, political prisoners?
Yes, there are prisoners who are kept solely because of their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So, actually, today there are mostly due to Amnesty's work, there are very few prisoners of confinement compared to what it was, because governments know that human rights organizations will take action and will not accept any kind of violations for those kind of human rights abuses.
So it stands up for people who are speaking out and speaking up, trying to change conditions in their country, or sometimes just giving their own expression of their own thoughts. They can be put in jeopardy because of that.
Yes, the freedom of expression is perhaps one of the most important rights in the Human Rights Declaration. And these are also rights which are in particular addressed for people who are discriminated. For instance, gay and lesbians, transgenders and bisexuals.
Right, and this film, Dangerous Living, it's a documentary and it's going to be shown next Monday night. Tell us a little bit about the film and about the details of seeing it.
Yes, Dangerous Living is a documentary showing where we are meeting different people from all over the world who declare themselves as gay, lesbian, transgendered, or bisexuals. And the way Amnesty International is working are that we will find persons that can be examples of human rights violations which will take place in general. So we are using the examples and the individual stories to try to make a change for a group of people in general. And in Dangerous Living, we will see examples from Egypt, from the United States, from Ecuador and China. And the story they can share with us is the same. The government are doing discrimination, and in addition there is huge social condemnation.
Who made this film?
This film was made for Amnesty International by a Dutch film team.
Uh-huh.
So they have been collecting these stories and made it to raise awareness of human rights violation towards gays and lesbians throughout the world.
Have you already seen the film?
Yes, I've seen it several times. I used to be a member of Amnesty International's GLBT group when I was in Norway, and I've been screening it several times, and it is really shocking for people who didn't know about these how much these people are suffering, and to see what kind of stories they can tell us.
Right. In this country, of course, we often have fears of gay bashing and other forms of discrimination. But in some countries, it's far more dangerous if you are identified as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. You can be locked away. You can have physical violence done to you. You can be, you don't have the freedom to be out and visible in the same way like you do in the United States.
Yes, the difference between what we have in the United States and compared to countries in the third world is that in the United States you are protected by the law to some extent at least.
Right.
It is not acceptable that police abuses can take place, even if there have been example on it. It is not, it's against the law.
Right.
So you have your basic rights ensured in the laws.
And not that this country is the pinnacle of human rights that we would like for it to be, but we don't have quite the same issues as they do in some of the other countries. So Amnesty International has undertaken this Out Front program, which is a voluntary activist movement that works impartially to prevent violations of GLBT persons' fundamental rights. So this film will be shown. What's the location of the film and the time on next Monday?
The film will be shown at 7 p.m. and the location is on the Montrose Counseling Center.
Okay, the Montrose Counseling Center, and that's over at their new location. Is that correct?
It's still on their former location. As far as I have understand them, they're just about to change location, but we will be where they used to be.
Okay. Well, we'll might be a good idea to check with them to make sure if anyone has a question. Do you have the address?
It's 3400 Hawthorne.
Okay. You mean the community center at the GLBT community center, 3400 Montrose at Hawthorne, Suite 207.
Exactly.
Okay. And this Out Front program, which is it a GLBT division of the organization or like a special interest group? Or how exactly does it function?
We are putting this, we are having this screening because we want that everybody in the gay and lesbian community in Houston can come and learn about these important issues.
Mm-hmm.
We will raise awareness, people's awareness on these important matters. And the second reason for having this meeting is that we want to see if it's an interest for making an amnesty group, which will be a part of Amnesty International's chapter in Houston.
So would this be a GLBT group of Amnesty International, or is it a group that's open to all interested people?
It will be a group open for all interested people, and, you know, it's possible to join the group and see what it's like and see how Amnesty International works, and but the group will be will exist as a part of Amnesty's chapter in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's open for everybody to join. And what's good about Amnesty activism is that you can have all kinds of levels. The simplest form for being an active Amnesty member is to be part of our online network, where you can sign petitions online and keep updated with the newsletters and follow the cases that Amnesty are investigating.
And how does someone join that email list?
The easiest way is to sign up on this email list, which can be done online. It's if you go to www.amnestyusa.org, and then you can navigate to LGBT issues.
Right.
And there you can sign up for being a member of the online action network.
Mm-hmm. And you can connect with other group members who are interested in meeting on a regular basis and coordinate activities. The existing network of other Amnesty groups in Houston and in the gay community. And I just want to go over a little bit about the Out Front program. Amnesty International believes that LGBT people are entitled to the full range of human rights protections. It considers people imprisoned solely because of their sexual orientation or gender identity to be prisoners of conscience. Amnesty International calls on the governments to repeal sodomy laws and all other other laws criminalizing homosexuality, to enact non-discrimination laws that are inclusive of LGBT people. It condemns torture and ill treatment, including forced medical treatment of LGBT people, and to end the impunity and to protect LGBT people against violence in the community, such as with police abuse in the United States. So lots of noble goals there, and this is an opportunity to get involved in the local Houston chapter by attending the film next week, if you can. Tell me about the your project that has to do with Africa. There's a photo exhibition involved.
Yes, as a part of Amnesty International's activities during Pride, we have a photo exhibition, which is currently on display at the Starbucks cafe in Montrose.
Mm-hmm.
And in this exhibition, we will meet people that officially don't exist. The people we meet are gay activists from East Africa. They come from Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. And in all of these countries, the politicians are claiming that gay, lesbians, transgendered, and bisexuals do not exist in Africa. It is something Western. It is. It has nothing to do with African culture, etc. It is very similar to the arguments that we used to hear, and also some places still can hear today in the USA or in my home country, in Norway.
In Norway. I think I accidentally introduced you as Swedish, but it is Norwegian.
Scandinavian.
Scandinavians. And so, coming from Norway and having an interest in the lives of people in East Africa, it makes me think of that slogan to think globally and act locally, because what you're doing is inviting folks to come be involved on locally in Houston, but it's something that has repercussions to help people all around the world. And what is your, you obviously you're already connected with several people that are interested in this. What do you think Amnesty International involvement offers to people who might have these concerns about human rights and things that are going on? I guess immigration issues. I understand that some lesbians have been able to seek asylum based on their sexual orientation status.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you hope happens as far as people coming to the meeting and what kind of things they'll get involved in?
I think the most important thing is to raise the awareness of people, because from my impression here in from the gay and lesbian community in Houston, people are very much involved in tasks and in questions concerning human rights, and there is really a great level of activism that you find here in Houston. But I've seen very little of is the international perspective on it, and I think it's an important a matter to have in mind that there are still people struggling in the world today with the same thing that the people who did the Stonewall riot back
right.
in 1969, that they're, you know,
well, when,
30 or 40 years back.
Right. We may have come a long way, but there's still a long way to go. I want to thank you, Kristen, for being with us on Queer Voices. The movie, or the film, I should say, documentary, Dangerous Living, will be shown 7 p.m. next Monday night, July the 9th, at the GLBT Community Center, 3400 Montrose, on the second floor. Tell the parking attendants you're there for a meeting at the community center, and you don't have to pay, but do park in the garage or somewhere legal. Don't park over at Kroger's. You will get towed. And is there anything I didn't ask you about that you would like to leave with the listeners, Kristen?
I just hope that everybody that have the chance to attend the meeting next Monday will show up. It's open for everybody. And in addition, I will encourage people to go and meet the non-existing people from East Africa. You can meet them or actually see the photos of them at a Starbucks cafe in Montrose. And just to be aware of that there are so many brave persons around in this country suffering from severe human rights violations each day.
Okay.
But we can do something to improve.
Yeah, you can be someone who makes a difference. So give me that website address again for Amnesty.
It's www.amnestyusa.org, and then you can navigate to the LGBT section on that site.
Thank you for being with us on Queer Voices.
We're taking the time machine back to the early part of the 20th century to discover two post-World War I gay male heroes, one real and one somewhat fictional. But first, a classic lesbian novel gives our commentator Janet Mason time to recall Paris's left-bank literati of the 1920s and 30s.
I watch you reading a book. I get to thinking our love's a polished stone. You give me a long, drawn look. I know pretty soon you're gonna leave our home. And of course I mind, especially when I'm thinking from my heart. But life don't clickety-clack down a straight-line track. It come together and it come apart.
A classic becomes a classic because it survives the test of time. Sappho became a classic because of her direct lineage to Homer, 200 years her senior, and also for our collective memory of her as the first poet to openly express her lesbian desire on the page. Gertrude Stein became a classic for her groundbreaking experimental literature and for her lesbian marriage to Alice, portrayed so compellingly in Stein's most commercially successful book, The Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, first published in 1933. Radcliffe Hall's The Well of Loneliness, first published in 1928, became a classic because, as the first book to portray lesbian life and its accompanying oppression, it created an uproar on several continents. Writing at the same time as Radcliffe and Gertrude, Juna Barnes gave us Nightwood, which on its first publication in 1936 was called an underground classic because of its edgy experimental tale of the tragic places that love gone wrong can take someone. It was published to little acclaim, with reviewers calling it strange and brilliant, queer, morbid and interesting, and the twilight of the abnormal, and yet it has stayed with us. The bisexual Juna Barnes wrote this book with the lesbianism of her characters very much as an aside. There is no mention of the crime of society in its views toward two women in love. The crime lies in what two women in love are capable of doing to each other. And despite this fact, or perhaps because of it, Nightwood has stayed with us as a lesbian classic. In recent years, it has been reissued by two different publishing houses with introductions and prefaces with notable lesbian literati Dorothy Allison, Modern Library in 2000, and Jeanette Winterson, New Directions in 2006. Like Gertrude, Juna was another American expatriate who lived in the 1920s and 30s in the Left Bank of Paris, where they were both part of the same literary coterie. Although their artistic circles transcended both gender and sexual orientation, both Stein and Barnes were impressive constituents of what the critics of the time referred to as the Mytilene elite, hearkening back to Sappho's Golden City on Lesbos. It is said that art imitates life, and this is certainly the case with Nightwood, in which Juna wrote about her heartbreaking experience in her long-term relationship with the faithless artist Thelma Wood. In 1922, Juna moved in with Thelma, who she would come to refer to as the great love of her life. Juna longed for stability and monogamy, but after a few idyllic years with Thelma, remarked, bitterly, one imagines, that Thelma wanted her along with the rest of the world. Thelma, who had an increasing dependence on alcohol, would leave their home and go from cafe to cafe, and Juna would follow. In Nightwood, Juna turns Thelma into a character named Robin. In Robin, there was this tragic longing to be kept, knowing herself astray, and suffering is the decay of the heart. All that we have loved becomes forbidden when we have not understood it all, as the pauper is the rudiment of the city, knowing something of the city which the city, for its own destiny, wants to forget. So the lover must go against nature to find love. I sought Robin in Marseille, in Tangier, in Naples, to understand her, to do away with my terror. I said to myself, I will do as she has done. I will love what she has loved. Then I will find her again. At first it seemed that all I should have to do would be to become debauched. I haunted the cafes where Robin had lived her nightlife. I drank with the men, I danced with the women, but all I knew was that others had slept with my lover. In real life, Juna and Thelma lived together until 1928, when Thelma left to commence a relationship with the heiress Henriette McCrea Metcalf. In Nightwood, Juna casts Henriette into the character of Jenny and wrote about her in excruciating detail. Jenny Petherbridge was a widow, a middle-aged woman who had been married four times. Each husband had wasted away and died. She had been like a squirrel racing a wheel day and night. In an endeavor to make them historical, they could not survive it. When she fell in love, it was with a perfect fury of accumulated dishonesty. She became instantly a dealer in second-hand and therefore incalculable emotions. As from the solid archives of usage, she had stolen or appropriated the dignity of speech. So she appropriated the most passionate love that she knew, Nora's, for Robin. She was a squatter by instinct. Nightwood is not an easy read. It is peopled with numerous characters. In addition to the narrator, Nora, and Thelma, there is Jenny, the heiress, a transgender doctor and ex-priest, and a baron with whom Nora has long rambling philosophical conversations that spring from the vast wilderness of her heart. Nightwood is deeply Parisian and bohemian, in a setting with deeply iconic images. In one passage, Nora likens herself to the Virgin Mother, waiting patiently for Robin to return. It is tortured and complex, but ultimately it remains a classic tale about a love so great that it is capable of stripping away the self. The question that Nora poses to the transgender doctor and ultimately to the reader near the end of the book is, have you ever loved someone and it became yourself? With commentary on queer literature and life, this is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
You say you hope I'm not the kind to make you feel obliged to go digging through your time with a pain. Look in your eyes, you give me the furniture, we'll divide the photographs. Go out to dinner one more time, have ourselves a bottle of wine and a couple of laughs.
Henry Gerber, gay rights organization founder. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Henry Gerber was born in Bavaria in 1892. In 1913, he immigrated to America and settled in Chicago. He became inspired by Magnus Hirschfeld's courageous work for gay rights in Germany while stationed there. After returning to Chicago's emerging gay subculture, he and several friends founded the first official gay rights organization in America called the Society for Human Rights. Gerber created the first underground gay publication called Friendship and Freedom, but it was short-lived. Acting on a tip, police discovered papers from the Society and arrested all its members. After three costly court cases, the charges were dismissed, but Gerber lost his job and his life savings. In the 1960s, he resumed writing for the Mattachine Society. Henry Gerber lived just long enough to witness the Stonewall Rebellion, the birth of the gay liberation movement, before his death. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Tom Miller.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
According to no less than the New York Times Book Review, it's not simply a novel about the swanky secret underside of old Broadway, but real literature, heart-stopping and soul-stirring. Heyday author Michael Victor Butler visited recently with David Leibig and Hare Mandu on the Homo Radio Show at WRPI-FM in Troy, New York, to discuss his book and read some excerpts.
I'm here because I've just moved to Albany, New York City, and it coincided with the publication of my book, which is called Heyday, that shocking novel of New York's lavender underworld. It's at BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com. It was great reviews came from it, which I'm blessed for, really. And the book is a gay history, somewhat fictionalized, of the 1920s.
Okay.
In New York City.
In New York City, and who's the main character, and what's the story?
Well, the main character is a man named Mac Daly. That's actually his nickname, because his real name is Benjamin Leventhal. And he actually lived during this time period, and he was a bootlegger, for all practical purposes, who siphoned off the booze because of his job as a government official for the Prohibition.
So he worked for the Prohibition, but he was a bootlegger.
Well, he was a bootlegger because he sort of had no choice. Being that he was scapegoated by the government poobahs, he found himself in an untenable position and then made a lot of money off it. At first he wasn't making money, but then he got smart. However, he lived an entirely secret life and not such a very happy life. And this book tells his story. He had his glory days, but unfortunately they were short-lived. This is actually the introduction to the character himself, Mac Daly. A tall man of 33, powerfully built, with dark blonde hair, stubbornly, thickly waving, lazily curling, in spite of daily applications of brilliantine. Eyebrows of the same shade, capable of a diagonal thrust when witnessing irony and folly. His eyes, made of topaz, rimmed in dark lashes, revealing an almost fatal kindness of heart. Eyes which betrayed also to anyone who might look long at him, a love and lust for other men. Eyes which had, deep behind them, an awful, unspeakable pain, of which you will hear much soon. A man made of burnished gold was our Benny Leventhal. The moment he would smile, everyone always fell in love with him. Not like any smile you've ever seen, because in this angular grin there was a sadness and sex. So they called him that splendid animal behind his back. And he laughed when he heard it, liking it. They called him their best friend, because if there was anybody whom you wanted for one, it would have been him. He was the kind of guy you prayed for, the kind of fellow you secretly loved without ever being able to admit it. "You know, pal, I just love you," you might find yourself blurting out. And he would never be embarrassed, replying with just a trace of a continental accent mingled with New Yorkese, "Thanks for that. You're very kind," in that deep, sensual voice of his. On that certain day in April of 1928, anybody encountering this dapper, mannish, all-American guy would have shaken their heads in wonderment had you told them he was a lover of men and men only.
This instant admirer would never have accepted or believed it, not for a minute. And even if you told them he was a Jew, they would have said something like, never would have guessed that. No siree, not him, not that guy. You might imagine that he was lonely, this non-Perel gentleman out of an arrow collar advertisement, this matinee idol, this dream come true. Was he haunted every moment of that charmed life of his by a desperate, aching emptiness? A Jew and a swish to boot? You bet he was.
Wow.
Well, I can tell you briefly that I interviewed a man in 1969, long since passed away, who told me about a World War I part of the Army called the Army of Charm. Mm-hmm. And it was a bunch of gay guys who were in the armed services then. Mm-hmm. And Mac Daly was actually in this regiment, according to... Now, this is fictionalized. I put him in the regiment because I thought, this is so great, I can't possibly...
He would have been in it.
Yeah. So they go to visit. There's an annual sort of convention of these guys, these World War I vets, up in the Adirondacks, and they go to see them. They go to see the colonel who's in charge of them, and they this great Adirondack-style house, and they drive up, and here we are. Everyone grabs some piece of luggage, with Colonel Connaught leading them toward the house, all of the dogs at his heels following devotedly. Slowly, the doors open, yielding an outpouring of men dressed for the country, smiling, waving, and calling out the names of Mac, Elliot, Ducey, and Baby. This was evidently the real Army of Charm. Then several more came behind them. Two blind men led by another, possessed of a face like a saint. One in a wheelchair with no arms at all. Another like Ducey with a cane. Joe realized that these were the casualties of Mac's regiment. The rest were whole, apparently in good health. But some of these appeared to have never truly survived the war inside themselves. It was written on their faces. They had a sadness about them, even through their smiles, a few of them struggling to hold back their tears.
Wow. Oh. Oh.
Well, I think that's about it.
Wow. Wow. Well, yeah, gosh, it's so nice to have you in the studio.
It's great to be here.
And I wanted to want to thank Dave for being in the studio today on this holiday weekend.
Thank you both. No problem. Glad to be here.
That was Michael Victor Butler, author of Heyday, that shocking novel of New York's Lavender Underworld, with David Labig and Hare Mandu on WRPI-FM's Homo Radio. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Janet Mason, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Tom Miller, and David Labig and Hare Mandu contributed program material. Thanks also to John Delahanty of Scarlet East Studios for production assistance. You heard Farron singing Ain't Life a Brook, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. You can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by direct tax-deductible donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. You can email us at tworadio@aol.com or postal us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, KBRP Bisbee, Arizona, CJLY Nelson, British Columbia, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Well, that was an interesting interview you did, Deborah.
Well, thank you. I think it's very interesting at the different things that people are involved in our community. And
I know we used to be able to keep up with all this stuff.
It's hard now. But one of the things that's kind of exciting, too, is that there are some younger people coming along that are involved and that they are involved on many different levels and venues.
Well, and now not that she's young, but Pokey, I was on the Access
show. She's not listening.
No, I have a lot of respect for Pokey, but you know she now does a program on KPFT on Sunday evening, which I don't even
called the Monitor.
Okay, good. I'm glad you know what the name
is. Yes, of course, it's very good.
But she does, she doesn't just do the GLBT issues anymore. She does a lot more universal issues, but most of those issues very much direct our, affects our community as it does many other communities.
Sure. There's nothing that happens that doesn't affect us. We just have other things that do affect us. We're special.
Well, and a lot of the activism that's done, on non-GLBT issues are done by GLBT people.
This is true, too.
True.
Yeah. And, one time somebody called and they were kind of going on about, I'd appreciate what you're saying a lot more if you were involved in other things. And I'm like, apparently, he doesn't know who he's talking to because, both Jack and I and Jennifer, we've all been involved in organizations, some community groups, and GLBT is certainly a huge part of our identity and something that we think is important to have on a human rights position. But, for everything else, there's just so many other things like the healthcare system that concerns us or
potholes in the street,
Exactly. So it's good that if someone's out there doing something, they're making a difference, and whether it's the international human rights or whether it's getting that pothole fixed, by golly, we need every one of them. So
or clean air.
Well, clean air is a big one, and big,
especially
exciting,
in the city.
Big exciting concert coming up next Saturday. It's going to be July 7th, 2007. Some people consider that a magical day. 777.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and Al Gore has put together this big worldwide event. Concerts are going to be going on all over the world. If you're lucky, you can attend one of them. But it's one of them is even in Antarctica, and there is a population of 17 people on the island where they're going to have this concert. So they will be sold out. The full population will be there. But the exciting thing about it is that it's to bring attention to global climate change and the issues that we face in the environment. And if you're involved in moveon.org or you want to go to that website, you can find out where there is an event happening near you so that you can see some of the footage of the different concerts around the world. That's the only way you're going to get
to see it. Well, speaking of events, on Wednesday, 4th of July, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus is having this annual 4th of July fundraiser, and it'll be hosted by Niece Parker at her home.
And her partner, Kathy.
And her partner, Kathy.
Sure.
I was going to add that part, but thank you. But if you want information and come join us for a good old American barbecue and Politicos, hglbtpc.org.
Or you can call us at 713-521-1000.
And you're supposed to disclose that you're the president.
Oh, I'm the president of the caucus, by the way.
And Jack is also
I'm on the board.
And I am an off-again, on-again member. I think I'm due to pay dues again.
And general troublemaker. As
well, yes, as often
we
as
need
possible.
An agitator, and you're
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
we
okay,
love you
thanks.
For that. We'd like to thank our guest tonight.
We certainly would. You're our wonderful
Ray Hill, talking about the Supreme Court, and did an excellent job.
And Fernando Dovalina, American Homefront, the play that's written. It's this will be this Friday evening.
At Unhinged Productions.
Yes.
Our Amnesty International guest, which was Kristen Magnuson. The film is Dangerous Living next Monday night, 7 p.m. at the GLBT Community Center. And all those excellent versions of This Way Out, we included some of the program from last week because we had bumped it. So we're kind of caught up now with the international news magazine, This Way Out.
And next week we're going to have David Elliott call in from Washington. Jeff Reed's going to do our political beat. and the Alley Theater. What a surprise.
Well, the summer Act Out event, it's Summer Chills with Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile. This is the first time they've done the Act Out event in conjunction with the Summer Chills. And as always, those programs, that Act Out Night is has funds that go to help a community organization.
Absolutely. Good night.
Good night. Sleep.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
KPFT is looking for production assistance to support a few programs. The general functions for this volunteer position include operating our soundboards, maintaining and troubleshooting on-air quality, and providing assistance to programmers as needed. No experience is necessary, but technical competence and ability to think clearly and quickly is a must. Contact our volunteer coordinator at 713-526-4000 or via email at volunteer@kpft.org to support any of the following shows.
Interchange, Mondays at 7 p.m., and New Capital, Thursdays at 10 a.m., need board operators. In addition, production assistants are needed for various tech roles.
To volunteer for any of those shows, contact our volunteer coordinator at 713-526-4...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.